From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
The term food forest from the permaculture world sounds big. Like, if I suggested you start one, you'd probably say, I don't have room for a forest of any kind. But today's guest bets that most of us who garden have room for at least a little bit of fruity deliciousness in the form of a tree or two underplanted with some carefully chosen companions. Like maybe where a portion of the front lawn is right now, and maybe emphasizing native fruiting species. Maryland-based Michael Judd is a longtime champion of edible landscaping, the author of various books, including For the Love of Pawpaws, and he hosts an annual Pawpaw Festival each September. Lately, he's even the creator of a new app called Fruit Patch to help you get started on your own little food forest. So welcome, Michael. How are you?
Hi, Margaret. Good, good. I'm always happy to talk plants with you.
Harvest time going on down there?
Oh, yes. Harvest a bunch of American elderberries and beach plums today with my little girl, and we're going to make some popsicle juice out of it.
I know. You make the most interesting recipes because, of course, elderberries, you know, you don't have to kind of take them off the plant and shove them in your mouth at most points in their ripeness. But you make, you make syrups and juices and popsicles and all kinds of great stuff.
Yeah. One of our favorites is food forest jam, which varies with the harvest season. But one of the bases of that is sort of black currant and black aronia, elderberry. And then we sweeten that up with some gumi or some beach plums or Nanking bush cherries. And so there are all these different combinations that are exquisite, very, very tasty.
Not that you have a lot of fruit or anything over there.
Now, gotta do something with it.
How many pawpaw trees?
Oh, gosh, at least 100.
And how many persimmons, American persimmons?
Oh, American persimmons. Now you're hitting all my sweet notes now. probably a similar number of American persimmons. And if you've never had a select American persimmon, it is one of the most exquisite fruits on the planet. It is delicious. Not like a lot of people's experience with a native American persimmon, which sometimes if eaten before fully ripe will feel very stringent and tacky in the mouth. Mm-hmm. And even some of those, even fully ripe, do that. But select cultivars are absolutely delicious dessert, like jelly with all kinds of aromatic notes in it. Two of my favorites right there.
Paul, you're making me hungry. So I'll say we're going to have a book giveaway with a transcript of this show over on awaytogarden.com. I forgot to say that at the beginning, but we will. And so what, I mentioned food forest in the introduction. And so what's a food forest? And then what's a fruit patch? Just sort of give us the idea of what this is on whatever scale.
So a food forest is not growing food in the forest. It's growing food like the forest. When you take a very healthy ecosystem forest, you see a lot going on. Right? You see overstory trees, midstory, understory trees. You see vines running up through it all. You see herbaceous ground level layers running. And it's all working together. It's all pumping and working symbiotically. So when we take that observation, we see that pattern. And when we come to plant something on our landscape out in the open lawn, you want to plant a fruit tree. Instead of sticking that fruit tree, you know, sort of out there in the middle of the sea of grass, you know, at the whims of weed whackers, what you're doing is you're creating a group for it, what we call a guild in permaculture. Typically, these are perennial companion plants that support that main fruit producer. So we're not necessarily going to stack that upper midstory and understory, but we're going to take the concept of putting plants together to support each other. And in that case, we often will put in something that fixes nitrogen, something in the legume family, something like the wild Baptisia, mm-hmm. Beautiful blue flowers, and has all these other benefits as well. But fixing nitrogen through the roots to the plants around it is like planting your fertility in one go. Then you're also thinking about, okay, well, let's draw in beneficial insects. So let's put something like yarrow in there, which has this great architecture, great habitat for all kinds of beneficial insects. Mm-hmm. And then you're also going to want something that's like a mulch plant, something I love to use like comfrey, which is also medicinal. So multi-purpose plants, but also things that are sort of, you know, I can chop and drop for mulch, or that can die on their own and pulse that soil level and feed that tree long term. And then you might have something like echinacea, you know, a little gas station for the pollinators to land on.
And
augment that pollination. So you're creating diversity. A guild is not just the plants; it's the life that it attracts as well. So it's sort of this insect ecology balance. And really, what you're doing is taking yourself off the hook, you know, for having to really care for that tree, because you've done a little bit of design up front by putting plants together. They help serve each other's needs, and that gives you more time to, you know, do yoga, swing in the hammock, play with your
kids.
Wait for the harvest. or go do more of these. And I call these fruit patches. Of course, they could be a nut patch. It could be, you know, a bush fruit, but it's a very simple concept. So it takes that larger idea of a food forest and brings it down to something that could be 8-10 feet in diameter only.
And you can like the canopy of the tree, so to speak, and underneath it, like that width, that size, you know, not the whole yard. It doesn't have to be the whole yard. It could be this one area.
Right. And then if you did have more space and you wanted to have less lawn, you could start spacing these patches out, you know, 12, 15, 20 feet apart, and have your other fruit trees in those spaces. And then over time, if you want, you could kind of keep doing what I call sheet mulching, which is like lasagna gardening. It's like laying down cardboard and newspaper and straw and wood chips and mulch, whatever sort of material that you have, organic material around you, floating around us, put that down, and that helps extend those patches so that over time, your lawn disappears. And you've got this cornucopia of plants. And when I do something like that, I'll often put in sort of running plants that'll help sort of cover that space and not have to maintain it.
Yeah, that makes sense. So we recently did a New York Times garden column together, and you were talking about this, that was about the subject of kind of fruit patches / turning into food forests and a lot of the native species. And one thing you taught me that I didn't know, because I'm not a lot of these terms come from permaculture, the traditional permaculture. And I didn't know that the tree, like if we say did an American persimmon tree, that's our centerpiece. And beneath it, like you said, is the guild of companions and so forth. What are some other sort of centerpieces that you especially like for those getting started?
Well, the elderberry that I mentioned earlier is a favorite. I like to get people started with fruits that they'll have success with, you know, so that they'll continue to plant. So I don't usually encourage some of the more challenging fruits to grow, which can be like peaches. Many apples can be quite a bit of input. So if you're not ready to sort of be very hands-on, then pick something that's going to grow very quickly and easily. And elderberries, oh my, they're like one of the fastest growing plants I've ever seen. And you can literally take a cutting at the end of winter and stick it in the ground, and boom, it'll explode into a bush. And
now we should say you're in Maryland. So the explosion, it might be a little slower explosion up here in
Yes, that's true. But eventually, I tell you, there's elderberries. I've been up in the Catskills and areas in New York, and I've seen big, beautiful, and they bloom gorgeous. So you're getting this edible.
Yeah, a division of them is because they spread, you know, the roots spread sideways. And they're easy to keep in check if you just go around the perimeter that you desire with a shovel every so often. I mean, you know, but I grew them always as bird plants because they're so beloved by wildlife, by birds especially. And so, you know, you, as you said earlier, you use them in, you know, your jams and syrups and popsicle liquid and things like that. But yeah, they're great wildlife plants too, and pollinator plants.
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes for most of your fruiting plants.
Yes.
You know, you're having all these multiple benefits. So you can plant for yourself and for wildlife at the same time. And that way, if you don't get to harvest, you're not worried. Something else is thriving from your efforts of putting it in. And those flowers, you can also, you know, you can bake those, or you can batter and pancake those. The flowers themselves have a lot of medicinal value, and they can be eaten long before the fruit shows up.
Yes. So elderberry is another possibility. And I when we did the Times story, you mentioned using another plant that I have for the birds in my landscape. A lot of them is the Amelanchier or shad or Juneberry. Mm-hmm. And I said to you, I said, well, I've never tasted a fruit because a flock of birds always comes in before they even ripen, really. I mean, it's just, they're just so beloved by, like, cedar waxwings, for instance, the fruits of the Juneberry. But that's another possible centerpiece, right?
It's a wonderful centerpiece. I mean, it's a very ornamental tree, whether you eat the fruit or not. Yeah. And you'll often see them in parks. I harvest them at playgrounds. You know, I've seen them outside of fast food restaurants. They're very common because they're very beautiful. It's a very sort of small, very delicate branching and habit to them. And then they have gorgeous early season flowers, like all white, you know, like these little plumes all over the tree, which then very quickly turn into these little blueberry sized fruits that have the flavor of sort of like cherry pie to me when I eat them, with a little bit of almond aftertaste. And so they are exquisite. I hope you can get some. Some years they will be wiped out by birds, but then, like this year, for some reason, the birds weren't hitting them. And we got huge harvests. I've made delicious Juneberry jam. It'll make great pies, where you can soak it in vodka. It makes a great infusion.
And they really have to get kind of dark colored, I mean, before they're ripe and delicious.
Ideally, yes. Yeah, they seem to be sort of reddish, and then they'll start to go sort of a purpley. You can get them a little early, and they're still pretty tasty, especially if you're going to make jam or sort of cook them down a bit.
Yeah. Okay. Now, with the pawpaws, not that you like pawpaws or anything, with your annual pawpaw festival, 600 guests, and oh my goodness, at your Maryland homestead farm, etc. You need two, correct? Because we need a little cross pollination. Unlike, I think, with the persimmon, it's I can only have one. How does that work with pollination with some of these things?
Right. So they're very with pawpaws, you know, more the merrier. You know, they grow in patches and groups, you know, because they, for many reasons, but the cross pollination is very important for pawpaws. Now, you might hear that they have, that there's a few cultivars that might have the potential to self-pollinate, but that's not what you want necessarily anyway. You want genetic diversity.
Okay.
The one or two cultivars or rare specimens that might pollinate themselves are not going to have a heavy fruiting set, and over time their fruit's not going to be the same quality. So even though there's a potentiality for them to self-pollinate, generally speaking, you definitely want to have cross-pollination, at least two, and you want to have them within 20 feet of each other. Okay. Now, the other caveat with pawpaws in general is you don't want them in strong winds for a couple of reasons. You know, one, because they have this huge tropical leaf, gorgeous edible landscape specimen here. We're talking like a foot long, you know, 6-8 inches wide. Oh, absolutely beautiful. And being that large, it loses a lot of water very quickly. So it doesn't want to be in the wind, and it wants to have enough moisture. Now, that doesn't mean wet soil, because they will not grow in wet soil. They need moist soil out of the wind. And that also helps with the pollination, since they're pollinated by sort of, you know, flies and fruit gnats and spiders and beetles and all these shady characters that, you know, wouldn't really thrive in the open as well. And then I also go ahead and plant a diversity, of course, all around them, so that I've got life going on to stimulate that pollination, because since it's not bees, you know, it's these other characters, you want to just kind of be inviting them in. So at the same time, black currants for me are flowering and bringing in life around my pawpaws. Gumi bushes, which is another one of my favorite bush fruits, is also heavily flowering at the same time and drawing in that activity in the zone.
Okay.
But you can also hand pollinate pawpaws very successfully.
Okay. So one of the other, besides that big tropical sort of oversized foliage, it also, they can potentially get great yellow fall color, which is beautiful, is another sort of ornamental attribute of them. So they are handsome, you know,
very really beautiful.
Handsome. Yeah.
And now they'll take on different growth habits depending on where they're at. So commonly they're known as an understory and are found throughout, you know, the eastern zone, throughout the woods in the understory. often as a patch, which is one mother plant with lots of suckers, and they can extend up to a quarter of an acre in some areas. So they can really dominate the zone. Right.
That'll do in the front lawn.
yeah. You don't want that. But that's more in the shade.
Yeah.
And what it's doing is it's self-propagating itself, not with fruit, but through its rhizomes. And that's how it's growing. It's very adaptive species. We're talking about the only member of the custard apple family that migrated over millions of years into the cold north. So it's an incredible, very unique species. And the fact that we're able to grow a tropical fruit here is just blows me away. It's just phenomenal.
And it's native in a lot of states. I mean, I think it's like
26 of them.
26 states, I think. Yeah,
but like it's busted out of that. It's busted out, and it's growing all over the continent. They're growing them in Europe. South Korea's planted a ton of them. I mean, they are becoming sort of this international, dare I say, phenomena. I mean, there really is a lot of excitement, and a lot of pawpaws are being planted around the temperate globe.
Yeah. So I want to ask you about a couple of things. One is deer, which always comes up no matter what I ever talk about on the show or write about in the Times or on the blog or whatever, deer. And I remember when we did the Times story, you had one fun assortment of companion plants around something or other, that certain centerpiece that you used as sort of a deer deterrent. You're 25 acres where you are.
Yes.
Property now. What's the deal with the deer?
We have a resident herd. I've actually never seen a site with more deer than ours.
Okay.
I've seen a lot, and I've worked around a lot, and this site is packed with the deer, partly because we're sort of on the edge of the woods, and then you come out into suburbia, you know, so they love that edge. Mm-hmm. Plus our site is loaded with plants, and you know, they're welcome here. So that has to be a key part of design always up front. You have deer, you have to design for deer first. And luckily they don't eat the pawpaws. They do not eat pawpaws now.
Oh.
That said, if pawpaws are not growing in your area and you plant a young pawpaw tree, the deer will try it because
they'll browse it. Yeah.
They'll browse it to begin just to try it because it's not in their memory bank. But as soon as they try it, they're not going to eat it again.
Okay.
So you can fence it for the first couple of years. And then once it gets up and once it's mature, it can handle that initial testing. They will not eat it. They will not eat it. I guarantee it by watching where I'm at and all the pawpaw trees I have. One reason I have a lot of pawpaw trees, too, is because we've got so many deer and they don't eat it. So definite positive there. But you're mentioning a guild that was in the article that I designed early on for a Juneberry, which they most certainly would love to eat.
Okay.
So to get that Juneberry going, I did a sort of a 10-foot by 10-foot, you know, fruit patch. And I planted the Juneberry in the middle, and then ringing around it, I did Egyptian walking onions, which are really cool. And you know, the deer don't eat alliums, so they're not going to eat that. Next to that, I had a spiky gooseberry bush, so they're gonna come up to that. They're gonna poke their nose and like, oh, this sucks, and they move on. And next to that is a culinary sage, and they're not going to eat the aromatic herbs either. So they're like, oh, nothing here, and they go along. And I had a wormwood, another medicinal plant, next to that, and then they're like, oh, there's nothing here, and they moved on, and they never saw that young, juicy, you know, Juneberry tree in the middle. So you can be creative with these.
So you fooled them on that one, yeah.
Yeah, I got them. I got on that one.
So some of the other, I don't know if they eat elderberry. I have a fence around.
They do.
They eat
elderberry. You betcha. Uh-huh. That's a challenge because I love growing elderberries. So what I typically have to do is I'll get sort of welded wire fencing, and I'll make a good, you know, 4 foot.
Like a pen, so to speak. Yeah.
Just a circle and tie it around and stake it. You want those to be ideally 60 inches tall. And you'll have to grow your elderberries out of that, and then have your elderberries be rather, you know, tall, which is challenging because most people don't realize, like most of your shrubs, you want to renew those stems to get ideal fruiting. So if you have a fenced in area, ideally you're taking out, the stems of the American elderberry after their second year. So anything over 2 years, you're taking out. So you only have first and second year canes, you know, primary and fruiting canes. And that way you keep your shrub rejuvenated and you're getting maximum fruit. Otherwise, they become sort of large and sort of crowded, and you'll get less fruit production and health decline will happen.
Okay.
So
okay.
Good to be interactive with your elderberries.
So you've recently introduced this app, the Fruit Patch app, I know. And I don't know if you get analytics, so to speak, or data from, I don't know if you know what people are interested in, or have you had feedback from people, or what kind of, because what it does is it kind of leads you through the basics of this process we've been talking about picking a centerpiece, depending on your sun or shade conditions, and then picking some guild members to go around it. And by the way, there's other kind of quote guilds that you could do. Like you encourage us to do what we're going to use or eat, right? Like you mentioned some before that have ecological value, but you also, we could plant our favorite herbs underneath it, right?
Right. So there's no set science in all of this. It's a concept, and you plant what you think you're going to use and harvest. Ideally, yeah, you do get in some nitrogen fixers and some,
yes,
you know, habitat plants. But even if you don't, at least you're creating diversity. You know, you're creating habitat no matter what by putting in other perennials around your plants. But by adding in the nitrogen fixer, you're helping balance, you know, the need for that fertilizer. But I also deeply mulch all the time. So I'm constantly feeding my soil. If it doesn't have a ground cover, a strong ground cover on it, and then I'm mulching it, and that feeds the soil. You know, the fungi are releasing nutrients to your mm-hmm. trees. So it's not necessarily a sense of competition that's going on if you have sort of a juicy zone for everything. There's plenty there, and they're supporting right. each other. So that's right. one concept you have to deal with, that whole competition. Oh, I got to have things all spaced out. In a sort of a linear, non-fertile system that's being fed, yes. But when you're really sort of creating a nice soil base, you know, you have enough there for your plants to thrive.
Well, in the way that, speaking of forests, in the way that the forest, before it got decimated in most places, the way that the forest would drop its leaf, you know, the trees would drop their litter, leaves every year, that leaf litter would degrade, continue feeding the soil, all the creatures that lived in the soil, and so on and so on and so on, right? It was a system, as you said earlier.
Right. So, and with lots going on, you know, a very packed system.
Yeah.
So it's taking that concept and observation, but the fruit patch is something I'm very excited about. You know, I'm always working toward seeing the change that I want in the world by, you know, it really helping people feel confident in planting fruit trees, nuts, you know, these medicinal plants, and having success with it, and how to do that, how to meet everybody where they're at and starting out. So I try to keep it simple and how to, and the fruit patch is a tool for that, where it's starting out, you know, with just basics. You can have full sun or partial shade options, and you can have a main fruit, and you can choose either like a culinary herb companion group, you know, for your tree, or a sort of more of a native pollinator group for your tree or your fruit bush. And we're soon going to add, you know, mushrooms to that, of course, because that's another one of the big
yes.
categories that I'm in love with, but easy to grow, you know, mushrooms,
yes.
and wine caps and things. So yeah, very excited about that. Right now we've started out, it's on the Apple phone, the iPhone. We're going to get it eventually to Android. You know, there's a learning curve with creating this software, but we're pretty proud of where it's at. Certainly
That's
encourage
fun.
Everyone
it's
yeah,
so
to
fun.
Check it out. Yeah, it's a
yeah.
tool. And,
yeah.
and it's actually a tool for a larger vision we have, which is the Food Forest Transformation Network, which we're starting out along the eastern, you know, side of the US. And you'll see a map on the app of the area that we're starting with, as far as you know, your choices for growing. But then, you know, as we grow this, we're going to create links and sort of a social network as well that shows how collectively through our fruit patches we can create this food forest network.
Huh. Not that you have big goals or anything like that.
Yeah.
Or 100 of these and 100 of those trees.
right. Yeah. Well, we need so much, don't we? We need so much. We need practical things that we can all do. And that's where I'm focusing.
Yeah. Well, Michael Jett, I'm always glad to speak to you too. And I had such fun doing the Time Story recently, as I said, because I really didn't know, many of my fruiting plants are just for the birds, I thought. So I didn't know these other ideas, you know, of how I could utilize them as a harvest for me too. So that was kind of fun. And I hope I'll talk to you again soon. And we'll have the book giveaway, as I said, with the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com. So thanks for making time this afternoon.
Wonderful. Thank you, Margaret.
And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you soon again, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening and food foresting meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.